We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with chess players, personalities, authors, and adult improvers about their lives, their careers, and about chess improvement. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hey everyone, just two quick things before I get to my interview with IM Yap Delamar. Number one, next week's episode might be a couple days late. I'm still working out the sequence of upcoming guests, but I wanted to give you guys a heads up in case Perpetual Chess isn't in your feed next Tuesday. Number two, in the upcoming interview with Yap, you're going to hear him talk about future potential chess steps, teacher training workshops. You'll hear a lot more details in the interview, but just wanted to let you know that the details on the workshop are still being determined. But if you think you might be interested in it, the best thing to do is just to email Yap, jdelamar@hotmail.com. I'll also put the address in the show notes and then await further instructions from there. Okay, on to the interview. Enjoy. Hey everyone, welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We have a guest I am excited to bring you this week that I have been talking to regularly, as we will get into that. But first, let me just give you some details. As a chess player, of course, he is an IM. He has one GM norm, peak rating of around 2450. He was Dutch youth champion under the age of 20 in his youth. He's played a mini match against none other than GM Jan Timman. But since 2004, he's been a full-time chess trainer in the Netherlands. He's worked with many strong scholastic players. He works with adults and teachers as well, as we'll talk about. He worked with chess bra Robin van Kampen, among many others. He was once a student of one of the founders of the STEPS method. Regular listeners of Perpetual Chess probably have heard me talk about it with various guests. It's a popular, growing in popularity and already successful curriculum that chess players and teachers can adopt. We'll get into that with the guest. But with all of that out of the way, I think we should bring him in. So, Yap Delamar, how are you, sir?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for the extensive introduction. I'm very flattered with all these great words, and sometimes even nice to hear all the things I already managed to do in all those years. I'm very happy to be in this show. Thank you very much also for that. And I'm very happy to tell something more about myself in first place, about something about the teachings I'm doing, the work I'm doing also for the chess trainers. And
So Jaap is a very, very good teacher. I've been working with him to improve my own teaching, and we'll get into the details of that in a minute. But Jaap, how did I do with my my big background research? Did I get everything right?
I think it's a very perfect reflection of it. I was starting actually already and very young. When I was 18, I was as coach already in I was already coaching on a kid under 16 years, the European Championship. I always enjoyed very much to coach and to help players to get better, to be stronger. And I always felt that this is maybe even one of the biggest drives I have in my teachings, is that I always felt that if a player needs some support, some help to get better at something, I hope and I think that I can make him better and to make his passion for chess, of course, better as well. So that's definitely also one of the drives I have, and I've been involved in actually in all ways for the chess world, as a trainer, as a teacher, also on national and international federations. I'm trying to be involved to support chess projects.
There's a lot to dig into, stuff that, again, in our conversations you've alluded to, but I haven't had a chance to get all the details. But I want to just get a little bit more about your bio first, Jaap. So we were born in the same year, I was able to ascertain, thanks to FIDE always having the birth year. We're both 1977. And it says you've been a full-time chess trainer since 2004. So I wanted to, and you mentioned that you had that ambition from a pretty young age. So what happened in between? Did you go to graduate? You went to university. Did you go to graduate school?
I have my master's degree. I made also postdoctoral, my teacher's degree. So I'm a first degree teacher. So it means that I could work in schools as well. But I decided already, because I was already quite advanced in my chess teachings, so that in the end I decided to leave my university study for what it is and just focus fully on my chess study.
Okay. And here in the U.S., that would be, especially in 2004, that would have been considered somewhat rare for, I mean, obviously you're a super strong player, but for someone who's not a top 100 type player to decide they're going to devote their careers to chess in 2004. I think now it's becoming fairly standard, but back then it would have been considered a little bit unusual. Was that the case in the Netherlands as well, or not so much?
I would say that even in Holland it was not, or in the Netherlands, I should say nowadays, which seems to be the new promotional way to advertise my country, it was not very popular. I invented my own profession in that way. I was very lucky, and I consider myself as very privileged in that I had been training with Bruniat until the age of 16 years. After I've been training with Herman Grote, also he had a profound influence on my career. And then as a trainer, I think Cor van Wagenen really had a massive influence on my teachings. And we have had many discussions, especially when it comes to fundamental didactical questions. And I would say that's something which really had a big influence on me, each of them in their own way. Brynja really brought the passion and the first passion to chess, that chess could be something really fun and really get into it and to master it, and to feel also that chess is something you do together. It's not, I mean, of course, we are always playing alone, but chess training and to have fun together, to analyze together, to have tricks together. This part is still, firing as an inside me, and which enjoys me every single day. So I don't feel I'm working. I'm just living, and I'm very privileged to play chess every single day. And
excellent. Yeah, and just to provide a little more background for listeners, so the gentleman that Jaap is referring to, Rob Brunia and Cor van Weygarten, apologies for the mispronunciation, the inevitable mispronunciation. Those, as listeners may know, are the founders of the Dutch Steps Method, this Dutch curriculum that we've talked about a lot. And the project that I alluded to that I've been involved with Jaap, and I'd also like to give a shout out, here you go, Metan, to Metan Prilatensky, Sean Hoschel, and Paul Sweeney, three other US-based teachers. We've been doing workshops with Jaap in order to become better STEPS teachers and hopefully get STEPS certification. Listeners may have heard Hans Schut from the Netherlands on the podcast about 6 months ago. He's an adult improver, and he has been the only certified chess teacher in the United States. Of course, there are many in the Netherlands. So we've been working on that project, and what Jaap describes about his enthusiasm for chess and for teaching, it really comes through. We've been doing these Skype calls every 3 weeks where we just all worked together with Jaap to try to become better teachers. And it's rare to see, I mean, the enthusiasm for chess, I would say, is not as rare, but the enthusiasm for teaching and for the didactics of teaching is not as common. So I've learned a lot from it, and that's sort of what we're going to dig into. But so, Jaap, I mean, obviously there's a lot to dig into, but just for listeners who haven't been listening every week to Perpetual Chess, or for whatever reason need a little refresher, Jaap, could you just give a sort of broad description of the STEPS method?
Well, what this makes the STEPS method unique and in some way interesting for any teachers to at least study it is that it's based on the development of the child. So it means that really it makes it step for step. It goes very slow and very profound. And in this way, it makes very fundamental way to develop it. Also, what is very important, that is not based only on patterns, which is, of course, very very logical and very common to any tactic books, but it uses a lot of terms which are standing for questions, and these questions you can crack big questions or puzzles into smaller ones, and in this way it's easier to solve. So these questions more or less make breaks from our position, so you get a very clear way how you can search for specific attacking objects or signs in the position to start, how to solve it. And then, of course, you have techniques how to solve. And again, these are connected to questions.
Good. Yeah. And just to give some more concrete examples, again, I know some people are familiar with the STEPS method, but for those who aren't, there's a lot of puzzles that you may not have never seen the exact nature of before. Like for more beginner level players, they'll be defend against checkmate puzzles. So there's a page full of puzzles where there's a checkmate threat and you have to find the only way to stop it. Or there'll be a threatened checkmate puzzle. Or there'll be a defend a piece by moving away puzzle. And then you get your more typical checkmate and calculation puzzles that a lot of you are used to. But the STEPS method really breaks things down on a much more granular level than a lot of chess curriculums. It's designed to go from 0 to 2200. And I think this episode, talking to Jaap, will be a special treat. We have a lot of chess teachers who listen, but Jaap, we also have a lot of motivated adult players listening. So I also want to try to give them some red meat of what they can do to improve generally and how they can incorporate the STEPS method. And in fact, that calls to mind, we have a couple questions from supporters of the podcast. And one of them, I think, comes up a lot because naturally, regular listeners of this podcast have heard people like Hans Schut and John Hartman talk about the STEPS method. But it can be daunting to dig in, especially if you're doing it on your own. So this is a question from Jason Green. Thank you for the support, Jason. And Jason asks, is the STEPS method meant to be a standalone tool for improving one's chess? Or do you recommend to supplement the STEPS method with other forms of training, i.e. going over masters games, tactics training, etc.?
I mean, definitely. I would say definitely it's a method which cannot stand alone. I mean, we have to look a little bit to the history. I mean, although I understand the very practical way why people want to know what they can do with the STEPS method, still it's interesting and very important to know that historically seen, the method was developed in the background. There was nothing. So in that point in 1987 already, the two found the trainers, which I already mentioned, Brunia and Van Wijkenen, they had to develop for the Federation some new method. First, they wanted to, it was Withuis who already had a method, and they wanted to change it. And then at some point, they wanted to change so much that they said, okay, forget about what we have, and we just need to develop a new one. And that's why they came with this new concept of didactical concept of putting the child in a central position. The second thing is that you go through all phases in your development as a child. First, material. It means that you first capture only pieces. Things are in very short space. And then later on, you discover more the board. And after, you actually put it into relation to time. So all these things... And the systematically and the cyclists which are going through the books, because there are already 29 books, every single part of it is part of the development and to give a very good foundation. Why I'm telling this is because also in Holland we have a lot of chess clubs which had teachers who are teaching kids. And also they needed some guidance. So in the beginning, the step methods was nothing else than this guidance to the parents and the simple chess players at the clubs to give some guidance to the kids. Later, it transformed more that also serious chess trainers could give training to them. That's why later on, you see that the step methods developed and become more complete and more comprehensive. If it comes to a lone study, I find it quite difficult because the point is that, in my opinion, and that's also some things which probably we will talk about later on, is that training can't be seen alone. The same counts for all the chess books which are published at the moment. It's always you. If you want to develop, you have to have your own learning question, which is the basic on how you wish to develop. And every method or every book is just a tool to get better, to get your information, to make the steps, to get the skills, to get the knowledge, to improve your play and to make your development. So so the step matters. So in that case, I mean, if you're going through the step methods, you have to read the manual. This is very important. Most of the people skip the manual and then you see that they're using the step methods only in the halfway. They are trying to solve it just by intelligence. They look at positions and just try to look at it till they have the solution. That's not what the step methods is about.
Can I just hop in for a second and just clarify? Sure. Okay. So... just to clarify what Jaap is saying about the manual, the way he mentioned that there's 29 books, the way that the step method works is there's basically teacher manuals, which can be used as student manuals, but they're framed from a sort of didactic perspective of the best way that people can acquire certain knowledge and skills. And then apart from that, there's workbooks, which is where you actually implement what you learn and test to make sure you're acquiring the right material. So Jaap is just saying that the workbooks are very well constructed chess puzzles that try to be holistic. But Jaap was just saying that despite that, you also need to read the manual. So I just wanted to clarify for people who might not know about the manual and the workbook, but please go on, Jaap.
Yeah, so the manuals, that they write it already, how you make the search strategy, how you make the solving strategy, and then after you need to check your answers to see if they're correct or not. And this need to be extensive. And to do this alone, I find it very tough. I mean, I had a lot of pupils and students who are trying to do it alone, but in my opinion, this is very tough and if not impossible. The second point which comes to it, even if you manage to do everything alone, you read carefully the manual, you're making a searching strategy, you try to make it happen all for yourself, then you're playing games. And then in these games, you need feedback on what will be the next step. And there comes the role of the coach, the trainer, who needs to bring back the things you learn to the games and the other way around. So you have your games, you made some good points, you need to preserve them to make them stronger. And of course, you have some challenges which you're making to get better or to fill the gaps in your play. And that's actually a very difficult part if you want to do everything alone. In my opinion, this is because there are a lot of things you see from yourself and you can improve on, but of course, we always have our blind spots, everybody. And I see also that in this way, other materials, trainers, and even nowadays, digital tools can be also used as a to make the program more comprehensive and extensive.
Yeah. So, for example, for the first two steps, I mean, workbooks, there's a CD called Chess Tutor.
Chess Tutor is for even for the first three steps. We have the Chess Tutor where also you have this activating forms. And they are specifically additional materials to the step methods. They are not the same materials, but they are the same topics. So you have just more material to do the same thing, and they are more interactive.
Okay, but yeah, so for someone like Jason who sent in this question, and I think there are a lot of people out there like him, you mentioned that it's important to have a trainer because they'll develop gaps in their knowledge otherwise. Now, some people might be in the category where they already have a trainer who doesn't use the steps method and they might be happy with that trainer, or some people might be in a position where they just can't afford a trainer, but they still want to improve chess as best they can and take advantage of the best resources. So is there anything someone like that can do to utilize the steps method, or should they just kind of utilize everything else that's available from the vast chess world?
Well, I mean, as I said, if you want to make full use of the step methods, then it's very important that beside the patterns you're working on and you try to optimize them, because we in the game, we need just to play. And the more things you're, sticks into the mind, your workload will be just will be full and it's just very tough to play. So we need to optimize it. So if you're working alone or if you're working with a trainer which is not really supportive this method or cannot, then it's very important for you to go through the books step by step, not to skip any topic, and every time not only focus on the correct answer, but also how you get there, how you make the answer. Did you search for all the attacking objects? Did you make a full list of candidate moves? And after you can decide on how to solve it. Those things are the main point. And then you need to think in the game. For example, you play the game, try to revise it with yourself, see what kind of tactics did you miss, and try to use the vocabulary of this method and to bring it into this one. And for example, if you missed an eliminate defender, try to make these pages to get better at them. But again, this is something many methods are supporting. So the difference is mainly the vocabulary and the way how you archive, all the positions and how you can activate them at the right moment when you're playing chess.
Right. And it sort of sounds like if one were to try to go this on their own, they would basically be trying to teach themselves to be the teacher and the student at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
In general, I would say that if my student would come to me with a new method or anything, I always will be open to look at them. So in my opinion also, if you're really in favor of the step methods and you have a trainer next corner, which of course is very convenient, try to show them at least what you're doing. Try to say, in the training we do this. I would like to include in the program the step methods in some way. So can you please try to, have a look at least about it, and maybe in this way to get some feedback also from your trainer.
Okay. And of course, for any trainers listening, that sort of dovetails with the topic I mentioned earlier, that I did this teacher training with Yop. And again, I benefited greatly from it. I have a lot of experience teaching, but I still learned a lot and feel like I have a whole lot more to learn. Yop, could you give a little bit more background from your side of the ocean of how this sort of flagship experimental program to teach some U.S. teachers about steps training? How did it come about on your end?
I mean, it was a long way. I think 3-4 years ago, Paul Swaney, I think it's pronounced.
Friend of the podcast, Paul Swaney, yeah. Based in Virginia. Yes, go on.
Yeah, we are good friends. We were training together. We had already a lot of discussions about the step methods, and he was at some point was really pushing me almost every week to make it happen. And he said he wanted to get certification. He felt also that it's just a very good way to develop himself as a trainer. I think that's also something very positive we all should realize as trainers that the learning part is not only for the student, but that's also for us. I'm learning each year on languages, on all kinds of other workshops about sleeping, about energy management, about mental discipline, about psychology. I'm always trying to develop myself in all of these categories to be a more rich chess trainer. And also in the last years, I'm developing myself as a trainer, so to say, for the Dutch Federation. In this way, I'm also helping to develop the materials for the trainers. And I think the project started 2 years ago when we already had questions in Holland about to get the course into English. And we made the first translation. Since already we had there a good start, we had this conversation. Paul said, I probably can get some good friends to make a start and to make a trial. And I would say that we made a very good job. I mean, I was pleased and very happy about how we could make it work, because for me it was also quite exciting and thrilling if we could make it happen, because it was over Skype. We had four people in the screen, so it also means that we need some discipline in the way how we discuss everything. You were among them, so you already saw that sometimes we had some challenges in the connection and everything, but I think that we did a very good job there in the end. And I think we had interesting conversations about where we have options, because I still feel that I don't believe in one method. I'm really happy about the step methods, but I really think that in the end the teachers are much more important than the materials. But of course, good materials really support and helps the teacher to do better work, and to also in preparation it saves a lot of time. And what I like very much also about the step methods is that it's very consistent in their terminology about the terms. And for example, if I would go tomorrow to Hong Kong and I would give lesson there, I immediately could start working. And the same counts if a student from Hong Kong or America would come to Holland. Immediately in the next day in the chess club, I could continue working, because the questions are the same, the answers are the same, the way how we crack things into pieces is exactly the same thing. And in this way, the learning becomes just much more fun and interesting. So your question was about this program, how it came. So more or less, we wanted to make a trial. The Federation fully supported this initiative, said, go ahead. I can happily announce that we have now four full certificated trainers in America. I mean, extra. Four more?
Yeah.
So I think that's a very good start. Now we are planning on even looking at how we can make it into, open for more trainers. I think that would be a great...
So let's get to that in a second, Jaap, and I'd like to share a few little lessons I learned. I mean, and then we can sort of give some more information for anyone interested in potentially pursuing this. But we do have a question from friend of the podcast and former guest that I mentioned earlier, Hans Schutt, based in Florida, a certified steps trainer, who you guys can listen to his interview about how he's still improving at chess in his 50s, and about his background with the steps method. I'll link to that, of course, in the show notes. But Han just was wondering, he says, is your online chess steps training an official certification program endorsed by the owner of the method, Cor van Weygarten?
Yeah, I mean, that's, he fully supports us. In general, he's just very happy that the step methods get more people, so to say, to know it and to work with it. He's working with the Federation in this way that the Federation is fully allowed to give this certification with and work with the step methods.
Okay.
Although he is an independent, company business, which of course is selling the step books himself. I mean, so it's only for the teachers, degree. This is for the Federation, the way they can work with the method, so to say, and the examination of the step methods is part of the Federation.
That's good to hear, because Rob Bernier, of course, has passed away. So Cor is the remaining living founder of the STEPS method. And listeners who heard my interview with another Dutch chess enthusiast, Geert Vandervelde of Chessable, may recall Geert talking about his efforts to bring the STEPS method onto Chessable, and how Cor, due to wanting it to be more of a book and classroom-based experience, kind of wasn't as interested in that. So I know that, I mean, of course, it's his baby. It's his life's work. So it's understandable, but I'm glad that he is loosening the reins a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I can give you the main reason or background on this point. What is very important for him, and one of the didactical reasons, is also that nowadays, because everything becomes digital, the temptation to make instantly moves, to guess, to gamble moves, so to say, and to think and to overthink and rethink becomes less important. And with the books, you immediately slow down, you immediately take time. And all these kind of things, they are very important. Why we would like to work in a little bit, let's say, in the old-fashioned way. Is that we need to give, an instrument also against a little bit of time. I'm very in favor on some digital things when it comes to the learning, to automize the learning process, but it only can be done if already the foundation is there, because otherwise you automize the wrong, the habits and
right.
An automatism. So one of the reasons why he's a little bit against the digitalization of the step methods is because people think they can skip and omit the most important thing, is that first you need to learn the searching strategy offline and very profound. And all these things which becomes digital immediately skip this step.
Yeah, the search strategy being how you solve a given exercise.
Exactly, and that you first need to think, what do I know about the position? What is going on? Which task do I have? All these simple questions, normally when you're on a website or when you're solving things, especially with time, and if you're getting points for time, then that's definitely increasing the wrong habits and the wrong things how you should approach chess. So that's the reason why he's very,
protective
in the way, because he feels that if he does develop in this way, then it's very difficult to get the ghost battle back into the bottle.
The genie. Cool. So yeah, but I'm just gonna, if you don't mind, I'll share a few of my sort of, I'll try to give a few bullet points from what I learned personally. Just give a few nuggets to anyone listening interested in improving their teaching or their communication. Obviously, this will probably be a primary interest to chess teachers, but hopefully, people interested in learning generally, I think, could probably benefit as well. Number one is just from a teacher's perspective, again, and some of this stuff may sound obvious, but for me at least, it needed drilling, which is just to give clear, almost painstaking direction in everything you do to your students. Just spend a lot of time going through how to solve a given problem or how to play a given mini game. As Jaap alluded to, the STEPS method encourages a lot of mini games, especially at the closer to the beginner level. And this STEPS certification program was for step one, which is, probably rated, I should know this, but below 1,000 or something like that. So give very clear, painstaking directions. Go as slow as possible, generally. In terms of what you're doing, you really want the student to master the subject. So if they're getting 70% right of a given puzzle book, that's not good enough to go on. You want to go back and make sure that they're getting it even better, and so that there's no gaps in their knowledge. And number three, and especially important for people teaching group classes, I think, but also one-on-one, is just always try to understand the student's motivation. That's something that's sort of common sense for teachers, but often if you are dealing with multiple students, it's easy to forget that. And everyone for every action, whether they're cognizant of it or not, whether it's a conscious motivation or unconscious, they're doing things for a reason. So if they're acting out, they might be bored. If they're trying to avoid a certain activity, it might be because they have a different learning style. So just always take a step back when you can. And if you're encountering, if you feel like you're not meeting your goals as a teacher and you feel like the student is making things challenging in some way, try to understand what it is that's making it challenging. How did I do, Yap?
You did a perfect job. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, as I said, I mean, to feel the motives of your students, this is one of the points which is very important. At first, level with them and see what they want to learn, where they're standing, where they're coming from. I mean, at each day when they enter the class, this is something very important, because we can't teach them, we can't give them any knowledge if we don't know what exactly they want to learn and if they're ready to learn something new. So that's definitely... I'm very happy you're reminding us.
Okay, good. Yeah, and of course it digs into the types of motivation, extrinsic and intrinsic. Are they trying to please themselves or are they trying to please others? And there's so much more. And the workshops generally, they weren't like the steps method strikes me from an outsider's perspective. It struck me as quite formal, I would say. But I would say these workshops or seminars or whatever you want to call them, they were not so formal. They were fun. So with that out of the way, Yap, I know already when I alerted supporters of the podcast that you were coming on and told them, revealed a little bit about this program, I know a few people expressed interest. So if other people would be interested in potentially getting some sort of STEPS certification, what would be the next step, Yap?
I mean, well, the next step would be the easiest, I would say, please just send me an email that you're interested and you would like to get updated on how we develop it. I'm talking because it was so successful and we want to give it more structural way of how we are going to do it. I will have discussions with the Federation about to make agreements and to make everything happen in a smooth and good way. That's why we still have to wait a little bit on those next steps. So please just send me an email with questions. I mean, it can be questions about the step methods. That's also definitely fine. You can already say that you're really interested in being joining one of these new trainings. At the moment already, I feel that probably we will develop at least two trainings, so at least one for step one and one already for step two, three. So if you already have a specific wish, you can, of course, address them also to me. And I would say still, I mean, what you also, I think, stress correctly is that those webinars which we were doing, I was really trying to understand what background you're coming from. That of course we have an ideal world where we can do perfect didactic things, and we have the reality where sometimes there are just a lot of kids and how you can organize. I was also going with you through all kinds of practical problems and how we could solve them, or in which way you can maybe think about trying new forms, working forms in the classes to make them more fun. And by sharing this with each other, I think we had a very good atmosphere and a very nice way of learning together.
Yeah, I agree. And one other thing I should mention, just to be clear, this is not like for listeners, this is not like a paid endorsement. I'm not being compensated for endorsing the STEPS method. In fact, the other thing I wanted to be clear about is the certification of actually costs a bit of money. Listeners shouldn't, anyone interested should know that. Obviously, the people training you need to be compensated for their time. But that's just something that you should know going in. Yap, do you have a ballpark? I mean, obviously, I I know what I paid, but I don't know if you have a ballpark estimate of what it would cost if and when it were to move forward.
Well, I mean, this was a very important one. I can't tell something at the moment, just simply because the rights are at the Federation. Still need to make the discussions with them, and also what it will happen and what it means for future. So just imagine that, maybe make it clear. I mean, I'm not earning money with the step medals. I'm just embracing it as a medal because I fundamentally believe that this is a very good way of teaching kids. I mean, to bring the passion into this method. I've been brought up from this method when it was just sheets and it was not even books. And I've seen around me that in one street, we had four players at some time going to the European and World Championships. Well, I don't believe that in a certain street, there are people born in a certain way that suddenly we have four big talents. So I saw it by my own eyes, how things were just done, how it had an influence on all of us, and what even all those chess players, they are still good chess players, grandmasters, masters, and also just good chess teachers from this time. So yes, I will be compensated for, of course, my hours and to give these chess classes as normal. But I just also want to say that all these things with the step medals is just not something I earn money from. It's just something I believe in.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, I think, Jaap, is there anything else to add about the steps method? I think we should talk with a trainer of your stature. We should talk some chess improvement, too. You think you're ready to move on?
Yeah, that looked very good.
Guys, before we get to Jaap's thoughts on Chessable, I just wanted to let you know that recent Perpetual Chess guest FM Camille Plicta has just dropped a new Chessable course. It's called Four Horsemen, the Sicilian Four Knights Defense, and it teaches a less common Sicilian variation that is light on the preparation required, but heavy on the active pieces. If this piques your interest, Chessable has a free short and sweet intro to the Four Horsemen course coming out on March 4th. So go to Chessable.com and check it out. Excellent. And one other thing, Jaap, I am not endorsed by the step method, but I am lucky to have the endorsement of Chessable. Do you mind, since you mentioned it in a webinar, I'm putting you on the spot here, but do you mind talking a little bit about what you've done with Chessable?
To be honest, I've becoming more interested in Chessable. I think they made good steps in development in a more proper way, how I can also use it as a chess trainer. As you already understood, for me, that automatism is one of the most important things I believe we should focus on in chess trainings, because most of the time trainers go too fast, cover too many topics, or to do it too superficial way. And one of the most important things is that we feel we are confident enough to master a certain topic. It can be pawn and games, it could be rook and games, any other. So I still feel Chessable is at least very useful for end games, where you can analyze it and you can just play it and practice it until you can do it by heart. I was seeing one of the end games of rook against a rook bishop against rook. And I think it was from one of the Chinese player. I think it was Ding, but apologies if I make the wrong one. And what I was very impressed is that he was just playing this endgame like it was mating with queen, king and queen right. against king. He was just defending it without any difficulties. He was just making these moves. And I had one of the discussions also with Mark Dwetsky, another great, if not the greatest chess trainers we have seen in the field, that he also said that most of the time we are forgetting that doing endgame theory, we just do it once, and then we expect it to happen all the time, and this is not going to happen. We have to practice it all the time again. When I made my GM norm, I was stealing actually 1.5 points from 3 grandmasters in 3 endgames in the endgame. And they had more than 100 points more than me, but in the end game, they were showing some lack of understanding, knowledge, or sometimes skills. And I think that one of the most important things, or how I see as digital tools, they should help us to automate it. But always keep in mind that automatization only works when you already have the profound knowledge to automate it and then it internalize it. And so that means that is for everything. The same counts for opening, the same counts for the other things. So Chessable is, in my opinion, is a very useful tool. But always keep in mind what you automate. This is the most critical questions I will always ask first.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And in terms of, I don't know how, so, I mean, I have a few follow-up questions, but number one, Steps, of course, is a curriculum, but people are, I think, one thing that draws people to the Steps method is the idea that, like, you don't have to constantly search for a book, you know? Like, you say, okay, I'm going to tackle this, and this will keep me busy for 2 years. I know what to do. We've had a few recent questions from friend of the podcast, Peter Newhall, saying, like, you can spend so much time as a chess enthusiast just figuring out what to do, you know? Because, do you have much familiarity with, like, Susan Polgar's beginner books or Artur Yusupov's series, which Jakob Allgaard mentioned on the show last week? Dabbled around with any other quote-unquote chess curriculums?
I have working quite a lot with Artur Yusupov books in my chess training for clubs because that's more or less surrounding that adult people come to me, have lessons together, but they have very different backgrounds. So it means that I need to differentiate a lot in strength and in experience and even in level. The good thing about Artur Yusupov books, they are from the exercise are from a lot of different level. So didactically, of course, this is not ideal, but since my group formation is also not ideal, right, they are ideal again.
Yeah, exactly.
So what I would say is that I think it's more fair to say what I see as an ideal way or how I look to books, because I don't like to say books are very good or not very good, because I see it more as a learning system. I mean, you want to learn something, so you need information in the very beginning, and after you need to understand how you can use this information, which is connected to questions. So each book which is really working with questions and which is cracking the question, the puzzles down into steps which you can make, and that in the end you can do it yourself, and then you examine it in the end if you can do it or not. Those books are always very good. The second point is that it should be very slow, because we are learning slow. Let's be honest. I mean, we have, of course, some genius players very young, but most of the time the trainers are doing this part of work. But if you have the books which are just published for the big audience, you see the small steps are never made. So it means that if you're working with books, it needs to go very slow. And yes, you have to have a lot of books. So all the books which are very small, I don't believe they can be very useful in the way, unless they are very, framing themselves and make it very short and very compact to what they want to learn. But main point is that I feel that in all the books, they are lacking the right questions, because there are a lot of books which are working with questions, but these questions are not consistent. They are every time they are different, or they are based on general wisdoms which don't help, because you still need to figure out which position they are valid and which not. Mm-hmm. So if you're not going through with these questions in a correct way, and if you're not referring them to your games on how these questions can be used, this is just very tough to make right improvement. Because only the things which are very close to where you're standing and exactly adding the knowledge which you need from your position, then those books will be useful. And that means it depends on your position which books can be used. So very often I use chapters of books, or I just use some games of books, because I know my students are at a certain development. They need a certain knowledge. They need to have, for example, they were missing certain maneuvers in their games. So I'm saying go through these exercises Sometimes I give them as solving, sometimes I give them just playing them through, and try to understand and rephrase it in your own words.
Okay, yeah, and Jaap, of course, has experience teaching a very broad range of chess skill levels, rating levels. Jaap, again, I'm putting you on the spot here, but can you think of any favorite go-to chapters, like you mentioned, that you have specific chapters that you might go to? Can you think of any favorites from any of the chess canon?
You mean chess books, which I'm using lessons. Well, I think that one of I think that two books are really have a very profound place in my learning, and I think that those books are, in my opinion, outstanding. Is one book is called Positional Techniques. It's a book from Techniques of Positional Play. Excuse me, of Bronsnik and Tyrkin. It's a book from a Georgian master, which is translated by Bronsnik, and it discusses something like 45 techniques. And what is very good, it's all mini plans, like how you can improve your middle game. So it means that, and they have something like 8 examples with a very good idea on how to solve, for example, the formation of where to put your king and queen and bishop, or how to chase the knight on the flanks and then conquer the center, something like this. So they have this 45 wisdoms, which is very compact and very profound, and you can easily adapt them to your play. So for amateur plays, from the mass amount between, let's say, 1400 until 2000 or 2100, I would say this is definitely one of the books which they can use with definitely immediately use. The second point, a book which I really like, and this is a little bit for stronger, is the book from Chess Lessons from Popov, who was training the sisters Kasintieva. In some way, this is I really enjoyed it because I was reading this book in Russian, and then I already was working on the translation because I liked the book so much. And then fortunately, it was published. So it means it saved me a lot of work. Right. In some way, it's interesting because, and once more, I'm saying this in the good sense of the word, but it's in some way the blunder book of the Kasintieva sisters, because he was taking all these examples from their games, what went wrong. He was explaining how they were thinking, and then he was showing how to improve it. So, I mean, and let's be honest, it's very pleasant to see that even this strong grandmaster woman who had a very great rating with 2575 or something at top, that how he improved them. I mean, he's really showing it that now they made the mistake, then they gave the examples on how to improve, and this is done very systematically. And I still find this a very instructive way on how you can improve your play. Unfortunately, of course, most of the examples shows that for them that they make mistakes, but on the other hand, we know that they were great players, so they don't have to worry. We have a very good impression that they became very strong players, and this system was working.
Wow, that's I'm not familiar with that book, Jaap. It sounds great.
Yeah, so that's definitely. And then I would mention, and that's something a little bit it's not in the books of Csaba Balogh, this greatest puzzles.
Yeah, yeah.
I like them very much because they are working with techniques. Of course, the techniques are not explained in the book, but I have them myself, and I'm working a lot with this material because I like the puzzles very much. So I find them very practical. And once more, I'm mentioning these books because they are for the biggest audience. Of course, if you have, let's say, 2100 or you're going to 2200 and you really want to become stronger players, in my opinion, there are two kind of books which you definitely need to study is old Dvoretsky's books, because they have a very... Well, they're just great positions and great understanding, and they are translated in many languages. And, of course, the new series of Jacob Agard. This is also a very great serial on great materials. Once more, what I like very much about these books, they are computer checked.
Yeah.
unfortunately, it's a little bit less with dress keywords, which means that sometimes you really need to check your answers. Also from the same series, I would say the books of Gelfand, I really enjoyed a lot. I think I really respected him very much as a chess player, and the way he is just showing his understanding and way in this book, I think it's also, I enjoyed it. But as once more, these books are only for players who are really already very advanced and interested in making the next steps.
Yeah, great, great for probably over 2,000, something like that.
In my opinion, because the very often people start to learn too difficult things in too fast, and normally it means you go slower in your development.
Mm-hmm.
So I really would like to increase this ELO more to 2,200. And before, if you're really much better off in studying more simple books. But for example, you can study the predecessors or something like, more the general games.
My Great Predecessors by Kasparov, yeah.
Something like this. I mean, to study this book of Popov and Tyrkin first two or three times, because we need to automize these ideas. And if you really automized them and did them profoundly, then of course it makes sense to study all the serious materials about how to think, because they're all very on detail. They expect you to, you can calculate already. But for this already, it requires quite a lot of knowledge and skills. So it's, that's for me. I know that in general, publishers normally try to, to make the audience bigger, because of course it's in their interest. But as a chess trainer, I'm very modest in this advice.
Yeah, just buy one book and do it over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I was reading this and I think it's so true. I was reading it from a totally other area of field. But he said, normally in life, we can better read one book four or five times when it's really good than read five books.
Yeah.
Because I mean, normally you implement in a much better way, and that normally brings more.
And one more question. Well, two more questions on books. So, do you have any other, let's say under 1600 recommendations? Any book recommendations for players of that level?
Do you have anything? Sorry, just to ask you the question a little bit back. Do you have a specific idea on the field of book? I mean, what kind of book?
Well, this is what I'll say. I mean, I, of course, have my own opinions, but I get the sense from most students that I work with are kids, which makes me less inclined to recommend like a Silman book or something like that, Jeremy Silman, to a kid. But what I will say is adult chess players looking to get better, I feel like it's not hard to find tactics resources. I mean, I actually think there aren't as many under 1800 puzzle books maybe as there should be, like especially like sort of the middle range between beginner level checkmate puzzles and sort of intermediate tactics. I mean, of course, Tactics Time comes to mind as a good one, but I think it's more sort of the soft concepts that people are trying to teach on their own, positional concepts and stuff like that. Silman is a good resource, but I do think that that's where there could be more. I know Elizabeth Spiegel recommended Johan Helstin's book.
Definitely. I mean, I think that I'm just saying some books which I find very good. And also because simply if I'm working with students at some point, we're just limited by time, what we can do.
We sure are.
I mean, yeah. So, but Silman books in general, I like them because they're very, he's very, extensive with words. He's very well written. It reads very quickly. What I would say is that a little bit my concerns, so to say, in comparing to the other books is that the way, if I read something and I like something, then I want to conquer it and I want to master this topic. And then I feel that sometimes it's lacking exercises and ways to automize them a little bit in this way.
Yeah.
For me, a good book is more or less covering both. I mean, the instructive way, the motivational way, and the way how I can master it.
Yeah, That makes sense. I mean, actually, he does have a Reassess Your Chess workbook. I've been a while since I've looked at it. I'd have to go through it again. But your broader point definitely makes sense, especially given what we've been saying about how you should really look to master a topic, not just go through it and move on.
I mean, you were mentioning the books of Halston, which already is covering a lot of exercises. To be honest, I'm using his openings book quite a lot because I'm not very in favor of a lot of opening lines. I mean, long opening lines or anything like that. I feel that if you want to learn opening just by how can I find general reasonable moves, how can I solve opening problems, I think his positions are quite instructive. Of course, as a teacher, I have some additional things which I'm using for my own lessons to give the students still more questions how to solve things. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed those books as well.
Okay, and one more on chess books, just because Maitan himself, here we go, Maitan. I'm going to try to say your last name. Maitan Prilatensky, who was one of the teachers that that we worked with in the training, one of my fellow students, although he's a great teacher in his own right and a master. So he asked, what instructional books by Dutch authors, other than The Steps, do you recommend for non-masters and their coaches? I don't know why he's interested in Dutch authors in particular, but what do you think? I mean, I had Herman Gruten on the podcast.
The book of Herman Grote, to pronounce it in a Dutch way, it's definitely one of, he was my trainer, and we did all the materials from his books. I think they're very joyful. They're very instructive in the way because, I mean, I look at it in a much more easier way, is that all the books which covers Grandmaster games or World Champion games, they are good books because simply the games are good. What for me is the most important thing is how they use questions to make them understandable for me and makes them in the end that I'm not only enjoying it, but also I can make better moves. Because that's the tough part, so to say. And what I still feel that a lot of books are just very good instructive books, but they're all lacking to make the question list so small that everybody can solve them themselves and can control if they solved it in the correct way. And that's what, I don't think Dutch authors are different than any other author.
Okay, yeah. So
that's, and even the books with Bronsnik, although I like them very much conceptual, also they are lacking questions.
Okay. Well, if anything, I just feel like there's a lot of good Dutch authors. I don't know. I mean
there are a lot of good authors, but I mean, as I said, I mean, to be honest, I like much more the books of Jesús de la Fila, which is also,
yes,
and especially the working book I like quite a lot because it means that you have the theory, then you have exercises, and from this theory you need to recall, and then you need to practice it and bring it into practice. And as you understand, this is exactly what I like from books, is that you have this theory, then you have some practice positions, and then you need to recall it. And in your commands, you also recall where you can find the theory in case you forgot about it or you want to revise it. And this is exactly what is, of course, very difficult with books, is that it's very static. I mean, and that's why, for example, we were talking about Chessable, which I already like, because then there are much more tools to bring them into practice.
Yeah. So Jaap, of course, is referring to 100 and Games You Must Know and the workbook. Okay. Well, Jaap, I think you've given some awesome tips for players working on their own to improve. Last thing, I think, or at least one of the last things, if you're okay on time, Jaap.
Sure.
Is just a few reflections from your career. So you had this mini match with Jan Timman. What was that like?
Well, that was very cool, of course. I was just a Dutch youth champion. I was 16 years old when I became champion with 8 out of 9, and it was very unexpectedly. And it was just simply because the year before I was qualifying for the World Championships under 16. And then I just wanted to qualify for the next championship, and the easiest way to do so was to win the tournament, and that went fantastically well. As a result, I was invited in a lot of big tournaments, among them YKZ, and in that year I was lucky enough there were these mini matches. I think the final was between Dreyev and Bareyev at the time. So I was drawing lots with Timon, and of course it was very, it was a very interesting moment. I was sitting at home, and then I was just looking at my computer. At that time, it was some megabytes big. I mean, it was just in a time computers were not very developed yet. He was 400 points stronger than me. I had 2235, and he had 2635 or anything like that. So then I'm looking, he was playing the World Championships against Karpov year before, he was playing the Narrows and all these things, and what did I had? I played my youth tournament, which I won.
Right.
So he could play any opening, and I had hardly any repertoire, so I didn't know where to start. But then I was really recalling this nice phrase from the Dutch football player, Johan Cruyff, that sometimes you cannot beat them, but they can lose to you. Mm-hmm. And that stuck to my mind that tomorrow I just need to give my very best and just go for it. Enjoy also the moment. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, as you can see, I mean, how often can we have such kind of competitions and can we play in such places? So I was just going for it. And the match itself went quite, disastrous, actually, in the beginning, because I was blundering a pawn, I think, on move 17 or 18. And, of course, that's not good news. But somehow I was just fighting, and he probably underestimated me a little bit, especially after I blundered another pawn. So one exchange, and probably had a good position. But, of course, I was still very young and happy to make a draw with the big Timon. And the next day I was playing once more because it was a match over two games. I lost to Brodsky a month before the match with Timon, and I was losing in some Queen's Indian, so I revised the opening a little bit so at least I could compete with Timon at least to hold on in the middle game. Then he was outplaying me because of care, of course, his strategic insights in the game were outmastering me. But I was fighting, and in time control, I could kind of escape to some kind of rook end game with pawn down. And then I was just playing for my life, just fighting, playing active chess. And miraculously enough, I made another draw. And that came even to the news. I mean, of course, it was a big sensation at that time. And so it was a very good memory. And
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and of course, in the tie breaks, he was outplaying me completely. He was just stronger.
Yeah. Well, something to always be proud of. Well, do you have any other favorite memories from when you were most active as a player?
The game with Sokolov was also kind of remarkable, especially because of the story. It was it was in Leeuwarden, and
in where? Sorry,
in the north of Holland.
Okay,
place called Leeuwarden, and I was playing Sokolov, and Bosman was playing Luke Van Wely, and in that time Sokolov and Van Wely were kind of rivals, which were challenging each other, and they had in the morning they had a walk, and at some point they didn't want to say to the other guy that they were tired, so they were keep on walking for almost hours. So that was the condition of the game, and I prepared some nice lines. So I think also my preparation was well, and I managed to put a very sharp position at the board, and I took a pawn, then I took another one just to see if he could find compensation, and in the end he couldn't, and I was winning this game. So this was also one of the remarkable games.
Yeah, amazing result to beat Sokolov. That story, though, I mean, are you sure walking isn't a euphemism for drinking? It sounds like drinking. Neither one wants to admit that they don't want to do it anymore.
This was really nice story. And as I said, Bosman also was winning against Van Wely, so it was really tough.
That's funny. I feel like there's more to this story, but thanks for sharing. And Yapa, one last topic. Before I let you go, you mentioned that you've been studying the Russian language. In our workshops, you also mentioned working on languages. So what's going on with that? How are you finding the time to study languages, and how does it inform how you think about chess learning?
I mean, in general, what I like very much about learning the Russian language is that they're working with questions. I mean, fundamentally, in Europe, we work with order to understand the sentences. But in Russian, they transform each of these words. And they're connected to questions, and from the questions you can make the grammar. I mean, as you understand a little bit of what I was talking about, the step methods, enthusiasm and endorsement for these questions is just very big, and as in language. And I felt that with learning these languages, me as a teacher, I can develop myself in a very good way. First, to understand why questions are important in the beginning. I'm just also in general enjoying languages when I go abroad and when I'm talking to people. But as once more, I feel that now I'm learning more each day. It keeps myself in some kind of statement where I keep on developing myself and pushing myself to no limits. And I find this also very important for each teacher to advise. Always try to take something which you're really enjoying. Also, a very simple fact is that sometimes, I always have to be responsible when I'm, of course, a trainer and teacher that everything goes right. And sometimes I just feel very relieved just to sit down and be the pupil and just...
Yeah, that's true.
To give the responsibility to somebody else to think about, to, well, make enjoyable lessons. And also I learned a lot from other teachers in this way because I was looking, I had all kinds of workshops and courses abroad. I learned from countries, I learned from cultures. I also see a lot of teachers doing, their methods or the way how they think about it. And it enriched me as a trainer because I see that a lot of things can work. I see a lot of other methods in this way. So all these kind of things are somehow making me more enthusiastic, more passionate about learning, about trying new things also with my students. And I would say that that's the thing. And where I find the time, yeah, this is a good question. I also want from time to time. But as I said, I mean, for me, before I was always, how to say, sometimes I was doing it, sometimes I was not doing it, but now I just block them. I just see them as something which cannot be missed in my development. It can't be missed in my week, like sports, the same thing. Mm-hmm. Every Monday I'm doing tennis. I'm playing sometimes tennis just also in my free time. But I see it as sports, and learning languages is not something I just do when I have time. I just make time for it.
That's great.
Yeah.
And what languages do you speak or are you working on at this point? What's the count at?
I would say that English, German, and Dutch, they are really at a very good level. Russian is reasonable, and Spanish I'm doing at the moment is also kind of reasonable level. So it's just...
So five languages is about average for a Dutch person, right?
In school we also had French, and I did a little bit of Italian, and maybe after these languages I will try to start with them. Because I see learning as something permanent, and I feel that learning language is just nice, especially since I want also to become more a trainer for other trainers in other countries. So it means learning languages and speaking languages is just something very nice because, as you already mentioned, if we want to understand the motives, if I want to understand the drives of students, it's always very good if you can do it in their own language, which is most close to them. So if I can narrow it, or at least I can make attempts to make this gap smaller, I see it as something very nice.
Excellent. Well, we all appreciate your ambition, Jaap. It's it's admirable. So Jaap, is there anything else you would like to mention before we let you get back to your busy life of teaching and language acquisition?
I would say that one of the things which we were discussing in our workshop was that maybe a little bit about the positive framework and the way of addressing. Very often I notice that when we are discussing games and players make mistakes, very often we think we need to correct those mistakes, which of course fundamentally is correct. But when we are looking at it from the motives of the kids, it's very often very interesting first to understand why did they make the moves? What was their intention? Did they think about something or not? And if you're going from this point and understand that they didn't make mistakes, nobody likes to make mistakes. So always try to feel that they have a positive learning attitude and try to embrace it and to make it stronger. That's something I would say that as a teacher is something very important to always keep in mind, that we have to make those steps and we have to make to understand what the student is learning and what
are. And of course, for anyone who's not a teacher, I mean, that advice could be extended to relationships, you know, it goes far beyond that.
I mean, this, to be honest, this is maybe something very big, but I would say that definitely that's one of the things what I love about chess is that you can refer to life, because in life, everything is complicated because we never have the end result. I mean, maybe in the end of your life, you can look back and see if you enjoy all your decisions or not. But the good thing about chess is that we can do it over and over again. So it means that if you want to understand how you're standing in the way how you're solving your puzzles, in the way you're standing in how you understand yourself, chess is some kind of objective game. So it means that everything what differs between this objectivity and your decisions is more or less your influence. So it means you can exactly say what is the difference between you and, the moves you are making.
Mm-hmm.
And in this way, I feel that it's a very good tool to understand yourself. And I would say this enriches also you as a person and the way you're living. Also, I think this is one of the most interesting sentences I was reading about Kasparov in his book about game and his life, that he was referring that he, because of chess, he understood how he was functioning, how he was making decisions, and how he could make better decisions, or in which kind of situations he normally tend to make mistakes in his kind of decisions or make wrong decisions. And this kind of understanding is a very luxury which we chess players have, is because we have something which escapes from influence from outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that's definitely one of the most interesting things also. I'm very grateful to the game of chess.
Likewise, yeah, and listeners, you can probably hear his enthusiasm, as I alluded to. And just last note, yeah, before we let you go, I did forget to ask, so for anyone listening who's interested in possibly pursuing getting STEPS certification, is there a rating minimum in terms of someone who would be interested in going for STEPS 1 certification?
No, there's no minimum rating. I mean, of course, you need to know the rules a little bit. At least in the end of the training, you need to be able to pass step one. So that's, that's something you need to overcome, at least during the training. But
that's like queen and king, checkmate, stuff like that, yeah.
Very fundamental, very basic, and really no chess is required. I would say that from step two already it becomes a little bit more serious, and I would say that probably it's convenient, for yourself, it's convenient if you have a rating around 1500, something like this, because it's not really necessary, because of course if you have a lot of didactical skills, there are a lot of ways you can be even a better teacher for them. It's just technically, it's very convenient to understand everything what is taught in a very good way.
Okay. That excellent advice. Yeah, and this can be a good way for listeners who, you know, want to get more involved in the chess world, even if you're not a master level player. This can be a way to differentiate yourself and learn more about the intricacies of teaching in the game. So listeners who are interested should email you, Jaap, and you'll just keep them in touch.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they can have all kinds of questions. Please feel free to ask any question. I guess that my email will be somewhere around the podcast.
I'll put it right in the show notes. And somehow, listeners, if you're having trouble tracking it down, just drop me a note. But
and please feel free. I mean, I find it quite interesting to help everybody see how it can work. It can be questions of all kinds of in the field, or maybe some remarks on what I was saying in the show.
And, good, yeah. Or, of course, if you want actual chess lessons from Jaap, that's always available as well, right?
Exactly. That's, I mean, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, Jaap, thanks a lot. This I was excited for this, and it lived up to my expectations. So I'm excited to see how this unfolds over the coming years. How the STEPS methods continues to gain in popularity, and I'm hoping to work with you more in the future.
Thank you very much for being in your show. I enjoyed it also quite a lot. And once more, I just hope that I was helping everybody who wants to improve in their chess, that they got some advice on books or courses or ideas how they can do it. And once more, I'm very delighted if I can be of any assistance in future.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Take care, Jaap.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. That includes my producer, Matthew Passy, for his timely and capable editing, chessable.com for their generous support of the show. But I also want to thank everyone who helps spread the word about Perpetual Chess, whether it be by telling a friend, writing a positive review on Spotify or YouTube, or we could use some new reviews on Apple Podcasts. If you're enjoying the show, please write a quick review. It helps spread the word about Perpetual Chess. But most of all, I want to thank the people who support the show financially. People who donate via PayPal or Patreon really help me continue to sustain and grow Perpetual Chess. And those who donate more than $5 a month get their name or entity's name read on the outro. That's about to happen right now. So I would like to give special thanks to the following people and entities for their generous support of Perpetual Chess. They are Chessable.com, Quality Chess Books, the Capital City Chess Club, the Apprend Chess Twitch Channel, Andrew Bach, Austin Clough, Benjamin Porteau, Kathy Carr, Chad Oliver, Dan O'Hanlon, Danny Davidson, David Schreiber, I am Dimitri Schneider, Faraz Sawaf, Gary Foreman, Greg Natel, Greg Shahadi, Guven Manet, Jens Green, John Jernigan, John Rockefeller, John Cromartie, John MacArthur, Kelly Palmer, Kevin O'Callaghan, Lone Pine Chess, Lorraine DeRay, Lucio Casada Silva, the Law Offices of Stuart Katz, Michael Kahn, FM Michael Oblin, Mike Zelazny, Moonmaster 9000, Moonmaster, we need a question from you. Is everything okay? We need you to send in a listener question. Peter Soddy, Reuven Fisher, Seattle Chess Club, Thomas Donix, Thomas Tachenko, Todd Bryant of Strong Chess, and Todd Kennedy. I would also like to thank the following Rook level supporters. They include Aaron Waffler, Ace Vallega, Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, FM Andre Terekov, Andrew Perry, Aniti Deer, Better Chess Training, Bill Juniper, Bill Moran, Brad and Andy Rosen, Brett Howard Lynn, Brian Mullis, Chad Hilton, Dr. Charles Snodgrass, Chris Flanagan, Chris Wayne Scott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Chabrie, Chris Lott, Christopher Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, aka Chess Explain, Coach J's Chess Academy, Courtney Fry, David Bleskachek, Daniel Gell, Daniel Ginsburg, Daniel Lucas of the U.S. Chess Federation, Daniel Naylor, Dave Saylor, David Cramley of Chessable.com, Dwayne Edmonds, Ethan Smith, I am elect or possibly not I am elect. I don't know if Three Norms makes him an I am elect. Donnie Ario, Fox Valley Chess Club, Francis Letart Lavoie, Frank Tortoris MD, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Geert Vandervelt, Gerard Barta, Giovanni Russo, Hans Schutt, Harish Srinivasan, Jacques Perry, James Aspinwall, James Banastia, James Murr, Jason Anfang, Jason Woolham, Jadeep Chakrabarty, Jeff Anderson, Jeffrey Martello, Jerry Wells, JJ Strnad, Dr. John Fallon, John Fernandez, John Fontaine, John Hartman, John Jeffrey, John McMurtry, Jordan Goodwin, Jose Rodriguez, Justin Gardner, WGM Jen Shahadi, Joel Rocky, John Thompson, GM Josh Friedel, I am Kare Christensen, WGM Katarina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, I am Kostya Kovutsky, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Larry Reifort, Laura Belyavsky, Martin Knudsen, Matthew Passy, Matthew Tedesco of SeattleChessMeetup.org, Mechanics Institute Chess Club of San Francisco, Michael Alerd, Miguel Arispide, Mike Clem, Mr. Mike Shahadi, Nate Salon, Neil Bruce, Olaf Mueller-Michaels, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passaman, Paul Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Richard Hollenbeck, Roy Yearwood, Ryan Berg, the Say Chess YouTube channel, Scott Doherty, Scott McKinnon, Sebastian Finsterwater, Stefan Roller, WGM Tatya Vabrahamian, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Tom Edsel, Tomas Komanich, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Wayne Beam, William Brock, William Juniper, William Hogarth, William Peterson, FM Zhao Jiang of Chess1000.com, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks, as always, for listening and interacting with the Perpetual Chess community, and I will catch you guys next week.
Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.